The following Life Matters talkback was recorded earlier. If you'd like to contribute to the discussion, please send your emails or voice memos to lifematters@abc.net.au. Look forward to hearing from you. That's lifematters@abc.net.au.
Hello, Michael McKenzie here. You're with Life Matters, and without any further ado, let's talk about long-term relationships, marriage and de facto. Sometimes things work, other times they just don't. One in three marriages end in divorce in this country, but we are staying together longer these days than we were 25 years ago. However, if you do make that decision to split, then comes the difficult job of disentangling. This can be so much harder when you have children. And yet new research is showing that when we split, the majority of us with children do work it out between us, largely without the lawyers and the courts. And we'll have more on that in just a moment. But we want to hear from you as well. Have you been through a separation with children that's worked out relatively well, a split that was basically amicable? If this is you, tell us how you managed it. And by the way, if you've been a child in this amicable split, we'd love to hear from you as well. How did it work? Please send us an email. The address is lifematters@abc.net.au. And I do want to stress that it's your stories about how to make amicable arrangements around the children in a separation or divorce. We're talking about those amicable resolutions today. Dr. Ray Kasbiev is a senior research fellow at the Australian Institute of Family Studies, and Jamie Hiscock is a mediator and team leader for Relationships Australia in Sydney. Jamie, Ray, welcome to the program.
Hello, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here.
Hello, Michael.
Good to have you both on board. Ray, I'm going to start with you because the Australian Institute of Family Studies has just released some new research about parenting arrangements after separation. What have you seen in this report?
Well, basically what our data shows is that the majority of separated parents, if we look at a nationally representative sample some 15 months after separation, we understand that 70% of them have managed to arrange things in relation to their children just through discussions between themselves. They may have made relatively light use of family law system services or lawyers or legal services such as the publicly funded community legal centres. But basically they say to us, look, we worked things out by discussions. It's much smaller proportions that need to use lawyers, courts, or family dispute resolution. Family dispute resolution, which is a type of mediation, is the most commonly used mechanism by 10% of that group. We find that 3% resort to courts and around 60% use lawyers to substantively work out their parenting arrangements.
But on the whole, the bulk of those doing the split, whether it be separation or later divorce, are doing it and handling it between themselves.
That's absolutely right.
That's kind of encouraging. When it comes to family court appearances, what have we seen in terms of figures there and representation?
Okay, so as I said, it's around 3% if we look at the time frame 15 months from separation. So it is a minority that uses that pathway. And we do understand from our research that it is the parents with the most complex issues around family violence, safety concerns, perhaps substance misuse, that resort to those pathways. So,
and Ray, just on that, with family court appearances, 3% at the moment in this new study, how's that compared to, say, a decade ago?
A decade ago, it was much higher. Use of court, still a minority, around 10% would be using court. What we've seen since the 2006 family law reforms is a much greater use of FDR, the family dispute resolution, which has basically doubled in the proportion of parents that use it. We also find that this pattern of people talking things through has strengthened in the last 10 years or so, because in 2006, it was really only around 54% that would have said to us that they use discussions to sort things out. So what we've found in the last 10 years is that self-help mechanisms such as discussion and mediation type mechanisms such as family dispute resolution have become much more effective pathways and more commonly used pathways for parenting.
I find that a note of positivity in what can be a very messy, hurtful and costly time. So it's great to see this kind of trend emerging. Let's see if this is measured up in anecdote as well. Let's head to Victoria and Susie is with us. Susie, what's your story there?
I hope you guys are doing well. And I was married for 10 and a half years. I got married when I was really young, so 20 when I got married. And I was married for 10 and a half years, and I've got an 8-year-old daughter, a daughter who's 8 years old now. Mm-hmm. When I got divorced back in 2014, our marriage was over because things weren't working out. He was outgoing and a lot of things were going on, so I decided to end the marriage. He didn't want to go through marriage counselling, but we had a house and assets together, and what I said to him, look, I can go through this lawyer, but I rather prefer being adult enough and sorting this out mutually, sitting down and talking this through, what we're going to do. So we eventually ended up, we didn't end up going through any legal lawyers for assets or property or anything like that. We just dealt with it just adult, in an adult manner. And yes, this did affect, my daughter was 2 years old back then. So we sold our house and our assets and everything. So we didn't go through any lawyers or anything. This did affect my daughter in some way or the other because she saw both of the parents together. For a few years, my ex-husband did not see my daughter and she kept on asking. But as a parent, I didn't feed her with any negative thoughts about her father or anyone because I just wanted her to know people in a loving and caring way. So I only fed her with positive things. And the only thing I always said was, your father's a caring man and he's a very loving man. And in that way, she saw everyone in a loving and caring way. And he sees her now after 4 years. He sees her now and she's a very happy girl. She doesn't hate him. She doesn't have any negative thought about him.
That's great.
Yeah, so I don't go through any legal DHS or anything to arrange any time to see her. All we've done is, all right, whenever you want to see her, talk to her, it's open to you. Just let me know and, yeah, and you can see her anytime you want. Take her away with, but yeah, so he spends a lot of time with her. So I guess there's a level of a lot of understanding needed in both parties when parents separate. The main thing is not to have any bitter thoughts about each other, but not to feed the kids with any bitter thoughts about each other because the kids do not deserve that.
No, they do not.
Psychologically, it affects them in future as well.
Susie, congratulations on working out the way you have with both your ex-partner and your daughter, and thanks so much for taking the time to give us a call. That's Susie there in Victoria. I might introduce again Jamie Hiscock into the conversation. Jamie is a mediator and team leader for Relationships Australia in Sydney. Jamie, that's a really encouraging story, but when is it when people come and seek your service? When does that happen? What are the circumstances?
Basically, when there is, they've usually tried to resolve the issues between one another for some time. It's not always the first stop, and obviously, you know, that there are other people out there in the community doing it, and they feel like they could be able to do it as well. So often they will come and see us when they've exhausted those, and there is often high conflict. And to some extent, the children are being affected by that, either indirectly through no communication or being witness to some forms of conflict.
Right. And so do you find that when it comes to people coming to you because they've exhausted their own personal attempts between each other, that both partners are most often willing to be in a room for that form of mediation?
It really depends on the circumstances of the case. So if being near the other person is going to increase the emotionality of either or both of the parents, then you want them to be in the best frame of mind to be able to consider options and think about how they would like things to be in the future. So at times we would put people in separate rooms, and often, you know, part of the mediation process is to make an assessment around suitability, which includes meeting with the individuals before the mediation.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we decide that we're not able to assess suitability sufficiently, and so we don't proceed.
Okay, Jamie, I'm going to come back to you in a moment. Ray, can I just come to you? Because when it comes to this quite positive figure that up to 70%, according to this latest study, of couples who are splitting or divorcing work it out between each other, if they do so without the enforcement or interaction with mediators or courts or lawyers, what tends to be the split between, and I'm talking here about heterosexual couples first, what tends to be the split between husband and, father and mother?
Okay, in terms of parenting arrangements, what we generally see for most families, most children are in arrangements where they spend most of their nights with their mother and they see their father regularly. Okay, so that applies to roughly about 75% of children in the sample. It's less frequent for there to be so-called equal care or shared care, which involves a greater amount of nights with dad. And we see that around 20% of children are either in equal or shared care. So it's 9% equal, 10% shared care. That's sort of a 35 to 65 night split. So it is most commonly a mother majority pattern in the general separated population.
And does that kind of ratio change if by some misfortune the couple who are splitting go to court?
Mm. Well, we do find that the patterns are different in court orders, and that is because you have people, the court orders reflect the operation of the law. They also, as I've said, it's quite a complex population that goes to court. But generally, if you look at a whole spectrum of court orders, so those made by the judge, those made endorsed by a court because of a consent agreement between the parties, we still find that around 85% of those orders provide for shared parental responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But the pattern of more nights with mum is also present in those data generally. However, we do see a tendency for there to be a greater proportion of arrangements in court orders where children spend more nights with their dad than their mum as compared to the general population. So
oh,
in the general population, it's about 2%. In a court population, it's between 10 and 19%.
Well, let's see how this all works on the ground. Let's take some more calls. Virginia is in Melbourne. And Virginia, you and your former partner were together for 17 years, I believe.
Yes. Hi, Michael. That's
hi.
Right. Yeah, we were together for 17 years and we split up. We had one child who was 18 months old. It was a pretty difficult breakup. It wasn't mutual, wasn't amicable. But we put our son's needs first from the very get-go. So we made a decision together to share his care 50-50 from that point, and he's 14. We're still doing it now.
How are things now with your former partner?
Fantastic. So we worked really hard at dealing with our own sense of hurt and anger kind of separately as adults in a mature way to ensure that we could really just co-parent effectively. So we have a very strong co-parenting partnership. We live about 5 minutes away from each other. We would talk on the phone every day. We sort of returned to being very much friends. We got together when we were very young, and that started really a strong friendship that we're now, almost 13 years later, have regained. So it's a pretty great situation, really.
And I take it great for your child as well.
Fantastic for our son. So he's got to experience, equal time with mum and dad. He's got to experience mum and dad both being engaged in their careers and being engaged in active parenting of him. We made this choice at the beginning because we're feminists, both of us, and we believe that men and women are equal to the task of parenting, and also that our son deserved to have a rich, strong attachment to each of us.
That's fantastic. Virginia, thank you so much for sharing that. That was really great to hear. I'll take a couple more calls and come back to Ray and also to Justin. Diana is an Orange. And Diana, you were a family law mediator, I understand.
Yes, I was.
And are you still?
Yes, look, occasionally, but at the age of 70, I have much more fun playing with my grandchildren.
I can understand that. So in your direct experience as a professional on the field, what have you seen over time?
What I've seen over time is that since the laws changed and mediation became a thing, before it was mandatory, people had less understanding of the capacity to have that support, you know, their decision-making and thinking around life as parents after separation. Nowadays, it's much more readily understood. Access is easier, though not as easy as one would hope it might become in the future. And I think also lawyers are becoming better able to support people through referral to mediators and then through, you know, drafting consent orders if they need to go to the court.
So those pathways of being non-adversarial are stronger now than they were in the past.
Yes, and I think the information base available to people generally is stronger too.
That's great to hear, Diana. Thank you so much. Let's go to Helen in Melbourne. Now, Helen, you, when you decided to split, and I think it was a mutual thing, constructed a family plan.
Yes, good morning. That's correct. So my husband and I were married for about 15 years. And look, in the end, it didn't work out. We're quite different people. And after having children, that exacerbates any underlying issue. So look, we sat down. We realised we both weren't happy. It took about 18 months to make the decision. So we didn't rush into things. We were quite honest about things. And look, in the end, we decided to make a family plan. We went and saw a mediation service. That process itself was very good. It was non-adversarial, it was quite supportive. And look, in the end, we came up with a plan that worked for everybody and putting the children first always.
Were the children involved in the plan, Helen? Were they old enough to help out?
They were quite little.
Right.
So they were less than 5 years old.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it was, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about how we were going to tell the kids. And even when we separated and I moved back into my house, Dad came and stayed with us for a couple of weeks. So, you know, the children always came first. And look, in the end, it's been a few years now. We've had a really positive outcome. The kids are happy. My ex-husband and I are happy. We've got a great friendship. We talk almost daily. We've gone back to being friends. And it's worked out really well. And the most important thing is the children are happy, joyful children that see their dad very regularly.
Helen, a great story. Thank you so much indeed. My guests today, if you've just joined us, are Dr. Ray Kasbiev, who is a Senior Research Fellow at the Australian Institute of Family Studies, and Jamie Hiscock, who's a mediator and team leader for Relationships Australia in Sydney. He's based in Sydney. Jamie, having heard a range of these calls, it's quite delightful to hear these kind of really thoughtful plannings around how the kids are best supported. Is that one of the focuses that you remind people of when they come into mediation with you?
Absolutely. The nature of the call, the content of the calls so far are have highlighted some of the things that are really positive, both for the parents, the adults involved and the children. So respect of one another in terms of not denigrating the other parent with the child or each other. Having good communication, and good communication doesn't always mean chatting every day as some of the others have, but functional communication. So, you know, the stakeholders, so to speak, know what's going on. And, you know, particularly for young children, that's very important. And obviously, as children get older, their activities become very important to them. So ensuring those, you know, the structural needs of the family group still are met, and absolutely putting their children first. And as the mediation or family dispute resolution is by legislation child focused. So whenever we have these facilitated discussions, what we need to do is have the discussion from the perspective of what do the children need from the two of you in this particular area.
That's a great reminder to have. Ray, earlier we were talking to someone and you sort of motioned to me. I think it was around Virginia when she was talking about some of her situation. Did you have some insights there?
Look, I just wanted to point out that the stories that we've heard from the listeners this morning are, as Jamie has pointed out, very consistent with the research that shows that what children need in these situations are arrangements and discussions that are focused on their needs, on meeting what they need at that particular stage in their life. They demonstrate that there needs to be an ability to be flexible. And again, as Jamie has pointed out, they need to have good communication. I'd also just like to point out that the research that AFES has done in relation to children in separated families does reinforce the point that children need to understand what has happened.
At any age?
Yeah, at any age, really, but in an age-appropriate way. They want to understand what's going on in their family, and they want to feel like they've been listened to, their perspective is understood.
Justin? Jamie, my apologies.
Yes.
Sorry, Jamie.
That's okay. We have a list of books that most local libraries have for normalising, if that's the right word, separation for young children. I would agree with Ray too. They do need to know what's going on, and sometimes one of the things that we discuss in mediation is what do we tell the children? I mean, there are some times when we're dealing with high conflict and we're trying to help them sort out some basically structural agreements so they can potentially work on their relationship later on. But oftentimes we are assisting people who are almost separating well, but not quite, and they just need some coaching and information about how they may do that.
Well, Jamie, just on that, one of the callers mentioned that they live very close to each other as separated and now divorced parents. Does proximity to the other parent augur well when it comes to long-term planning for that kind of split?
Well, yes. I mean, you could. There has been people refer to things as a golden triangle in terms of proximity, where there's 20 minutes between the parents and the school-aged children. Now, depending on what city you live in, that could make a big difference. But it does make a difference because it does allow both parents to be very involved in the day-to-day activities and life of the children and vice versa.
Particularly as the kids are getting older and they want to be with friends at certain times of the day or going to sporting activities outside school hours, that makes it easier, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes, but of course there are lots of ones out there. It makes it easier. Is it essential? No. In lieu of closer proximity, I think you would need to have lots of flexibility, lots of communication and a very sort of trusting relationship with one another. I would also say one thing that we haven't necessarily talked about, but is an essential part of good separated parenting, is a trust or in the other parent's capacity to parent.
What a good point to make. That's right. And in fact, on that, John says on Facebook, we did it on our own. I went and saw a solicitor, and when he said how much would it cost, it would cost, I rang the ex and she said, I trust you and you trust me. Let's just work it out. But it does depend, he says, on how your relationship ends. We respected each other and the efforts we had made. We discussed the breakup long before we acted on it and always put the kids first. Oh yeah, the solicitor was dismayed when I told him we didn't need him, said John. Let's take some more calls. Phil's in Melbourne. Phil, tell us your story.
Hi, how's everyone doing this morning?
We're doing all right.
Fantastic. Well, I arrived in Australia in 2007 as an international student and found myself with a partner and doing well at school, but then she fell pregnant and we decided to have the child. Unfortunately, shortly after she gave birth, she went through postnatal depression and her mental health really deteriorated. And through that, her ability to parent obviously was hindered. And she left us. And I was forced or thrown in the situation where I had to raise a two-year-old. And I was really an unexpected situation. She returned and obviously was clear that she no longer wanted to be together. We found tried to find solutions, but they were far and few in between because, you know, consistency is probably one of the things that you need to be able to have an amicable separation.
Mm-hmm.
Later, I realized that obviously I had a contribution because I'm from Africa and the cultural relativity has a big part to play in it. Thankfully for me, I had a huge support network with my friends at uni. And a lot of them were people who always wanted to have a discussion. So we used our friend network as a solution, really. Called friends that she had, called friends that I had, and we sat and really tried to talk through things and try not to talk about them through a prism of judgment and blame, but rather trying to look forward and see what we could do based on the situation we had.
So, Phil, are you co-parenting now?
Well, actually, I have my son full-time, and I had to give up any prospect of having a usual 9 to 5, and I ended up finding a career that I love. I love yoga, and now I'm a yoga teacher in Melbourne, and I have my son full-time, and his mother can come to our house anytime she wants. In fact, I made it a point to move close to where she had decided to move just so she could have access, because I was aware that I was sound of mind most of the time, and less so than she was. And so I had to take it out of the state that it was about me. It was about trying to form a relationship between my son and his mother.
Yes.
And try to find a solution that was lasting, not just for myself, but also for her. Because ultimately, what happens in her life has a big effect on what my son will become in the future.
Sure. And it's great that you recognize that as one of the parents of your child, your son. Phil, thank you so much for taking the time. I think as much as we have a full board of calls, because we want to hear these stories in full length, it's so difficult for us to squeeze another story in. So I would ask for those callers who are waiting to talk to us, if you would like to email us, we'd love to have your accounts too, so we can weave them into the Life Matters conversation and they'll appear in the mailbox tomorrow. So we'd love to hear from you. That Life Matters email address, if you couldn't find your way onto the radio today, is lifematters@abc.net.au. Some final words from Dr. Ray Kespiev. I think your Family Institute of Studies results are heartening, that people are finding the power within themselves to mediate their own dissolution of the relationship, and that's all to the good.
Absolutely. And it's been very interesting to hear the personal stories this morning and the strength of resonance that they have with our findings. And I just am very pleased to hear that people are being so child focused.
Jamie, just very quickly, Jamie Hiscock, some final words from you as mediator for Relationships Australia.
I think one of the things for those of the people that are struggling is to have an understanding of some of the emotional processes that are affecting them as they go through this very difficult period, and that understanding them helps them make goal-directed decisions as opposed to reactive ones. And I would say that's the case with many of the callers
Indeed.
That have rung this morning.
Jamie, Ray, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time.